Radio Prague News.
The President of Austria is in the Czech Republic on a two-day visit. Inhabitants of Slavikice have approved the Dukovany expansion but said no to a nuclear waste dump. And Czech TV has defended the rights of musicians who criticized President Miloš Zeman in a recent broadcast. Austrian President Heinz Fischer arrived in the Czech Republic on Monday for the start of a two-day visit. He traveled by train to Prague's main station and then on to Lany, where he was received by Czech President Miloš Zeman. The two heads of state laid a wreath at the grave of Czechoslovakia's first president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, and later held talks at Lany Chateau. A plaque was also unveiled in a special ceremony at Stochov train station to mark President Masaryk's meeting with his Austrian counterpart Michael Hainisch 95 years ago. On Tuesday, President Fischer will meet with Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and attend a Czech-Austrian business seminar in the Czech capital. The majority of Slavikice inhabitants have approved the construction of a fifth unit at the country's oldest nuclear power plant in Dukovany. In a referendum held on Sunday, 89 inhabitants voted in favor of expansion, 60 were against. However, the town strongly rejected the building of a nuclear waste dump in the vicinity. 136 votes went against and only 11 were in favor. The town is located just 2 kilometers from the Dukovany plant. A no to expansion would have meant losing a 2.2 million crown subsidy from the power utility ČEZ, which operates the facility. Public broadcaster Czech TV has defended the rights of musicians who voiced criticism of President Miloš Zeman in a live broadcast on Saturday of the annual Angel Music Awards. Ahead of her performance, respected singer Lenka Dusilová lashed out at the president over his recent support of China, accusing him of, quote, groveling before regimes which suppressed freedom and democracy. Her words were echoed by fellow performers David Koller and Klára Vikisková. The president's spokesman Jiří Ovčáček reacted by calling the criticism of Mr. Zeman about as, quote, brave as artists on Czechoslovak television in 1977, pledging support for socialism. He suggested the opposition voiced by one of the artists was fueled by frustration that their alleged man, Karel Schwarzenberg, lost to Mr. Zeman in the presidential election. Some 700 people were evacuated from a complex in Prague known as Justiční areál na Myčinách, which is the headquarters of several city district courts and state prosecutor's offices, after an anonymous bomb threat. Police searching the area found no evidence of explosives. The threat was called in at around 9:30 a.m. The operation wrapped up before noon. In other news, the East Bohemian town of Hradec Králové saw the opening of a new facility on Monday, which will streamline all information regarding application for European funds. The building in question was renovated at the cost of 20 million crowns. The Minister for Regional Development, Karla Šlechtová, confirmed that the building, called Evropský dům, or European House, is the first facility of its kind in the Czech Republic. Regional Governor Lubomír Franz said the facility would make it easier to navigate the application process. The vast majority of inhabitants in the Moravian Silesian town of Karviná are in favor of the continuation of coal mining in the area, fearing the area would otherwise be hit by a rise in unemployment and also possible seizure of property by court order if local mines shut down, a new poll by Stemmark suggests. The company OKD operates mines in the area, which are losing money. Layoffs and closure of the plants have long been discussed locally. 75% said they favored the mines being saved, while 99% said they feared unemployment. 93% of respondents said they worried about the seizure of property if they were not able to pay off their debts. Turning to sport now, a number of Czech players have already agreed to play for the national squad at this year's Ice Hockey World Championship set to begin on May 6th in Russia. Players from the NHL who agreed to play under coach Vladimír Vujtěk include goalie Ondřej Pavelec, defenseman Michal Jordan and Jakub Nakládal, and forward Tomáš Plekanec, all of whose NHL clubs failed to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. David Krejčí of the Boston Bruins is not expected, according to the news site idnes.cz. I'm Jan Velinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio with me, Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, Austria's President Heinz Fischer is in the Czech Republic on a two-day visit. Topics due to be discussed are security, bilateral cooperation, and the migrant crisis. More in a moment. The Czech energy group EPH, together with PPF Investments, is said to be on the verge of another major acquisition. We'll also have the latest in sport, and a little later in the program, Armenian-born political analyst Emil Aslan tells us why Prague is so popular with the middle classes from ex-Soviet states and why Moscow is interested in the Czech Republic. That's all ahead. Austrian President Heinz Fischer is in the Czech Republic on a two-day visit. His talks with Czech top officials are expected to cover security issues, bilateral cooperation, and the migrant crisis. Daniela Lazarová spoke with foreign relations expert Michal Kotan from the Institute for International Relations and to assess the present state of Czech-Austrian relations and to what extent they are burdened by issues such as the Beneš decrees or nuclear power.
Well, these issues didn't go away. In terms of the historical agenda, I believe that it has been really suppressed at the political level. As of the nuclear energy, it is still there. Austria will never, or doesn't seem likely that it would approach nuclear energy positively, while the Czech Republic will not give it up. But by developing more positive issues, the two countries now have more things to discuss. And they are not focused on the negative topics as it was in the past.
Is there further potential for business and cross-border cooperation?
I believe this is one of the most important areas of cooperation, especially in terms of joint ventures, of joint businesses, and also in terms of the Czech subjects investing into Austria. Also, the cross-border cooperation might be more intensified, because there is an enormous potential in the cross-border regions, but there are still bottlenecks in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the minds of the people. On the other hand, we shouldn't forget that Austria is a bit different strategic or geopolitical actor. It is a neutral country. It is not a NATO member. So I believe that, you know, in the geopolitical area, there might not be such a big room for cooperation, but practically oriented, pragmatic projects, I believe that there is a lot of potential. And now, if we are able to build the trust between the two countries, which has been severely lacking in the past, this potential might be utilized in the future.
What about the migration crisis? Is this divisive in bilateral relations?
It might have been divisive last year in the summer, especially when Austria clearly sided with Germany, mostly for reasons of domestic pressures of smaller populist parties. In Austria, the Austrian government made a turnaround and sided more with the Visegrad countries. So we can see a more similar approach in Austria as in the case of the Czech Republic and the other Visegrad countries recently.
And that was Michal Kotan from the Institute for International Relations assessing the present state of Czech-Austrian relations. He was talking there to Daniela Lazarová. The Czech energy group EPH teamed up with PPF Investments. The vehicle of the Czech Republic's richest man, Petr Kellner, is said to be on the verge of another major acquisition, this time in neighboring Germany. The deal is focused on brown coal assets, but that fits way and well with the Czech company EPH's existing activities. Chris Johnston reports.
The news agency Reuters, citing three separate sources, says the EPH bid for the brown coal mines, power plants and small hydro portfolio of Swedish power company Vattenfall is now the front runner for the major power deal. The sources say bids from two other contenders, namely Czech Coal and another partnership between the German energy company Steag and Australian investment group Macquarie, have effectively fallen by the wayside. The problem with the Australian-German offer is reported to be the high contributions they want Vattenfall to make towards environmental recovery costs and other future burdens. EPH has fewer misgivings and conditions and is reportedly also ready to make a bid which isn't too much eroded by the high risks attached to this deal. Czech Coal is not commenting at the moment. Vattenfall, a power company 100% owned by the Swedish state, decided to pull out of Germany because its polluting brown coal or lignite assets simply did not fit in with Berlin's renewables-orientated energy policy. And the question of how quickly Germany might phase out the sort of coal-fired power plants that Vattenfall owns there was one of the reasons why Czech power company ČEZ decided not to bid. State-owned ČEZ did, though, say it would remain on the sidelines and seek ways of doing a deal with Vattenfall if the situation changed. EPH appears to believe that Germany's brown coal phase-out will take a lot longer than many predict. So how well placed is EPH to seal another major deal? That was a question we put to Czech energy analyst Petr Linomas.
The chance that EPH will be successful is lower, or more lower than higher. And it is not only by the amount of money, but it's the question of German side and the other circumstances. So I think that, for instance, ČEZ should be a better and more transparent partner for German side and German government. So I think that it's a question if the deal will be done in future.
If EPH, which already owns German coal mines and power plants, does snap up the Vattenfall assets, then it will become one of the biggest power players in Central Europe. In power generation terms, it will double its capacity and be around a quarter as big again as ČEZ, with almost 21 gigawatts of capacity. Already at the end of last year, EPH sealed a deal to buy up at least a third of Slovakia's biggest electricity producer, Slovenská elektrárna, from Italian owner Enel. That could become two-thirds if the Slovak government doesn't use an option to boost its stake. The acquisitions trail has come at a price. Altogether, EPH's total debt is estimated at around 140 billion crowns.
And that was Chris Johnstone there with that report. A reminder, you're listening to Radio Prague, the English language service of Czech radio, where it's now time for all the latest from the world of sport. And Ian Willoughby has that.
We begin with football, and after the weekend's action, there's been no change at the top of the Czech league, with Viktoria Plzeň maintaining their 9-point lead over Sparta Prague, who have a game in hand. However, both title contenders had to come from behind to secure 2-1 victories in games that might have looked relatively straightforward on paper. Plzeň were first in action, going behind to Zlín within 10 minutes. The West Bohemians didn't respond until the 59-minute mark, when Milan Petrucella found the net after seemingly controlling the ball with his arm. Indeed, Zlín were so incensed with that decision that the home side's Robert Matejev was sent off for his protests. Plzeň duly pressed home their advantage, scoring the winner on 74 minutes. On Sunday, Sparta, who were at home, found themselves 1-0 down to Příbram after only 3 minutes. They needed captain David Lafata to find a decider with only 4 minutes remaining to keep their dwindling title hopes alive. Sparta will be in action at Letná again on Thursday when they welcome Villarreal in the Europa League quarterfinals. They lost 2-1 in Spain, but Jakub Brabec's valuable away goal will give the Czechs hope of delivering a major upset in Europe's second-tier club competition. Elsewhere, Czech national team captain Tomáš Rosický played one half of a game involving Arsenal's under-21 team on Friday. There have been fears that the injury-prone 35-year-old would miss the European Championship after he sustained a thigh injury in early February in his first appearance of the season for the Gunners. Thursday sees the start of the Ice Hockey Extraliga playoffs final, featuring Liberec, who came first in the regular season, and Sparta, who finished second. The Prague side hadn't reached the final in 9 years. In the NHL, the regular season has just finished and the final round saw Mikhail Neuwirth return for Philadelphia Flyers after nearly a month out. The Czech goaltender helped the club to a 5-2 victory over New York Islanders on Sunday that confirmed that the Islanders will face a Florida side featuring Czechs Jaromír Jágr and Jiří Hudler in the first round of the NHL playoffs, and that series too begins on Thursday. And has Patrik Eliáš played his final NHL game? After missing most of the season through injury, the two-time Stanley Cup winner scored New York Devils' final goal this term as they overcame Toronto 5-1 on Sunday. Speaking afterwards, Eliash, who turns 40 this week, said that going into the match he was 50% set on retiring. However, it had gone so well, he would now need to give more thought to his future. Meanwhile, 19-year-old Czech Pavel Zacha made his NHL debut with the Devils in the same game, meaning perhaps that one great career has begun as another comes to a close. That's all the sports news for today.
Okay, and Ian will be there with the sport. That brings us to today's main feature. Ian stays with us to discuss various aspects of Czech-Russian relations with Charles University political scientist Emil Aslan. That's in this week's One-on-One.
Emil Aslan was born in Armenia, lived in Moscow, and in his late teens moved to Prague, where today he is associate professor in Russian and East European Studies at Charles University's Institute of International Relations. So I thought he'd be the ideal person to ask about ex-Soviet communities in the Czech capital, the city's reported attraction to the Russian intelligence services, and relations between the two states. But when we met, I first asked Aslan what had led his family to relocate from Moscow to Prague, which they'd been visiting for some years.
In 1997, our family decided to move to Prague for good because of various reasons. Probably one of the reasons was that we were people from the Caucasus, Caucasians, so to say, and, you know, there were some problems because of the war in Chechnya, you know, the attitude of the local population towards the people coming from the Caucasus and so on.
So it became kind of dangerous to live in Moscow for you?
It was dangerous. It was very xenophobic, and we were having some kind of, you know, trouble with my brother, who is 10 years younger than I, and he was having some problems. I was having some problems. We were fighting all the day, you know. I was a student, but, you know, I had even more, probably more fighting, more street fighting than lectures at the university in Moscow. So it was getting dangerous from my parents' perspective. So this was one of the reasons. The second reason was that they just wanted for us to be living in a normal country, to attend normal university and to just enjoy our lives, which I think was a nice choice.
Did you ever feel any prejudice from Czech people? Because I know some Czech people are at least a bit suspicious of people from the East.
Yes, I think back in the 90s it was very enunciated, it was very strong. And its negative attitudes were toward the people from the Soviet Union. I myself, alongside my friends, I heard a couple of times, you know, myself being called Russian Rusatsi and something like that. It didn't really annoy me because I wasn't, and I still am not an ethnic Russian, so I was like, okay. So nothing happens. I think that nowadays this negative attitude toward the Russians has faded away. You have new enemies, you have new, you know, threat in the form of this Muslims, Middle East, Arabs, and so on. So it's not an issue anymore in this country. I personally, I don't know, I would not say, probably because I can compare my life in this country to my life in Moscow. So sometimes I felt some tension, but, you know, the Czech people, they don't really articulate aggression. It can be tense, something is in the air, you feel that the person might not be liking you too much, but nothing is said, nothing is done, so it's okay, I have no problem with that.
Prague seems to be popular with many people from the former Soviet Union. Why is that?
Some of the middle class in the post-Soviet Union, they want the same as my parents wanted for me. They wanted for their kids to move to a safe location, to get some nice degree, and, you know, to live their lives, to enjoy their lives. And where is the rich, you know, the stratum? They usually tend to be traveling to the United Kingdom, you know, to buy apartments in London and so on, you know, Chelsea.
And send their kids to Eton or whatever.
Yes, yes. So those coming from this middle class, I think they prefer Prague because it's not that expensive. You can afford a nice apartment in a nice place in Prague. And, you know, it would cost less than an apartment in Moscow, probably. Nowadays, maybe this, you know, may be different because of the falling ruble. But 5 years ago, it was quite different. So, yeah, it's a cheap place, relatively. specialist for someone coming from St. Petersburg, Moscow, and so on, from Kazakhstan, and by the way, also from all these rich countries, oil rich countries. So yeah, that's a nice place. I think that these public figures or businessmen, because of security risks, someone can kidnap your kid, yeah? It's good to have your family in a nice, safe place in Europe. So that might be one of the reasons.
Is there much interaction between the different communities from different countries of the former Soviet Union here in Prague?
I think yes. I think that the Russian-speaking communities, they tended to keep together, at least back in the 90s when I was much in contact with them. Nowadays, it might be different because you have so many Ukrainians over here. I think Ukrainians specifically, you know, following this Crimea crisis and this Donbas war, they might be having some kind of antagonism toward the Russians. I've not heard of any clashes, but I as much as I can judge, talking to the people, this might be the case. So Ukrainians and Russians might, to some extent, you know, go apart, part with their ways. When it comes to the people of the Caucasus or Central Asia, I think Central Asians, you basically have people from Kazakhstan over here. They are also quite numerous, so they stick together. I am not sure whether they stick to the Russians. I'm not sure about that. But I think that, yes, probably to an extent this would work as well. But the main idea is that the more people from various republics you have, the more they tend to stick together to their ethnic own.
Russia is one of your areas of expertise, and I was reading recently that there are believed to be a relatively high number of Russian spies in Prague. This is going by, for example, that there is a much higher number of people working at the Russian embassy in Prague than in other comparable European cities. Why do you think Prague is so interesting to Moscow?
This is a bridge to the West, definitely. If you want to move further west, it's good to be established in the city, in Prague, in the Czech Republic in general. So this might be one of the reasons. The second one is that, there are lots of people, former security agents and so on. There's some kind of pro-Russian public segment in the Czech society, which is stronger than in Poland because of historical reasons, probably. Even the year of 1968 didn't really change that. So I think, yes, you have some kind of breeding ground. You have some kind of positive local attitudes. I think that specifically following the Ukraine crisis and all this, you know, confrontation between the West and the East, so to say, many Czech people, they start seeing Russia as some kind of anti-mainstream. And this anti-mainstream attitudes, supported by Sputnik and all this, you know, propaganda websites and so on. So this I think, contributes a big deal to this popular perception of Russia. And Russian agents, by the way, Russian spies, as far as I know, having talked to a guy from Czech security services, they have lots of people in this country, lots of contacts. So yes, it's historical.
Well, Czechoslovakia was on the outer edge of the Soviet world. Today, does Russia see the Czech Republic as still part of its, or does it want to see it as part of its sphere of influence?
I don't think the Czech Republic is a big deal to the Russians for the time being. I think that there is some segment of Russian nationalists who see Warsaw, Prague as old Russian cities, so to say. But this is not the mainstream attitude of the Russian intellectual and political elite. So this is not the case. I think that the Russians want to be established in the Near East from their perspective first and then to move westwards.
I saw some headlines recently that Putin is out to undermine Angela Merkel on the back of the refugee crisis with a view to undermining the European Union. Do you have any sense that Russia is trying to influence politics in this country?
I think yes and no. Well, I am not willing to say something and be trapped, because there are some speculations that the Russians have been supporting some anti-mainstream parties in this country or some anti-mainstream movements, but I lack the proof. So this may be the case, but I think that the Russians are much more interested in supporting anti-mainstream, anti-established, anti-systemic organizations and parties in Western Europe, like in France, in the United Kingdom, at UKIP, you know, Marine Le Pen and all this kind of stuff.
Because they want to undermine the EU in general.
Yeah, if you want to undermine the EU in general, you have to be focusing on the core of the European Union, which is United Kingdom, France, probably Germany, by the way, Alternative für Deutschland, Alternative für Germany, is also a big deal. So the Czech Republic is not deciding the faith of the European Union. So you can have something at stake over here. You can have the Czech Republic as some kind of a basis for your operations in Western Europe, but you don't really have to be focusing too much on this tiny little country in the middle of Europe.
If the Czech Republic isn't so important to Moscow, why does Moscow seem to be running these disinformation websites like Sputnik, which you mentioned, and so on? Why bother?
Well, the Czech Republic is not deciding the fate of the European Union, but still it's an important country. I would not say this is not important. And on the other hand, you know, you don't really invest too much money in all this infrastructure because you have the Sputnik and all this stuff run in different languages. Why not translate it into Czech as well? Why not have a couple of guys either in Prague, in Russian embassy in Prague, or somewhere in St. Petersburg and Moscow writing some op-eds aiming at the Czech Republic? So this doesn't really require much investment. This can be done with relatively low costs.
What about Czech foreign policy toward Russia? Is it in some sense a little schizophrenic in that you have Zeman, the president, who seems to be more pro-Russian than the government, which is more mainstream, I would say?
Yeah, this is the case. Yeah, this is very schizophrenic, as you said. Yeah, and I'm not happy about that because this reduces, to put it mildly, the reliability of the Czech Republic as partners in the West. One, you know, the Minister of Foreign Affairs says A, the President says B, even though he has nothing to say about the foreign policy things. So then you have, you know, the Czech Republic being not taken too seriously in the West or in the international scene with this. This is not a good thing.
And as somebody who moved here in the 90s, how do you view the change in the country's direction?
If we're talking about the socio-economic situation, then I'm happy about this changes because I see that the people, even though, you know, the Czech people, they usually don't boast money and being rich and so on, but I see that the people, they have more money, they have more things, you know, at their disposal. They're happier. They can, you know, live the lives they wanted to live, that they wanted the children to live to. So I spent a year in the United States 10 years ago. It was in 2006, and I went back into the 2007. And I saw that even within one single year, the change was dramatic. You see people wearing better, you see, you know, better cars, you see all this stuff, you know. So I think, yes, in socioeconomic terms, it's getting better. In political terms, or foreign policy-related things, I'm not happy about Zeman, his agenda, so to say. I have some very bad feelings about what's doing. I'm also not happy about the repercussions of the refugee crisis in this country, the way it's being perceived of, the way it's being sold sometimes by the media. But I see that it's not that bad. It might have been worse.
You've been listening to One on One, presented by Ian Willoughby. This week his guest was the political scientist Emil Aslan. That brings us just about to the end of today's program, but a quick reminder, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard in today's show, please write to us at english@radio.cz. Also, you can look up many more stories, features, and news items online, of course, and there it's easy to visit. Radio.cz is the address there. I'm Jan Vellinger. For myself and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for joining us this day, and take care.